it's now an exchange money, and that's why I'm trying to get with the
300 Quaker, probably in the 5 up to 0.
They steal the door, they try to exchange.
Okay, I'm on the northbound actor. Just right at the line.
What can I think, Carl? What can I help you think of? I think we can set it up again.
If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ganglandwire. Follow true crime storyteller Gary Jenkins on Twitter at Jenks Law. Buy the DVD Gangland Wire or download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, folks. I'm back here in the offsite with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
I kind of like wimped out on that, say hello, Aaron, but you got the message. My voice broke, but you know what we're doing. We are, I was thinking ahead, we are here with our good friend, Martin McNally, who got hold of me after he listened to the 2-episode podcast we did on the airline hijacking or skyjacking in 1972, in which a skyjacker jumped out of the airplane and parachuted to the ground with $500,000. And after I did that episode, the suspect in that, I guess, the defendant later in that case, happened to be Googling his own name. He'd gotten out on parole. He was Googling his own name, and he listened to our podcast and thought they were hilarious and contacted me and told me that he liked what he heard, but we had some of the facts wrong. I said, you know, we'll come and we will interview you and get the facts right, because I think you folks, as Aaron often says, we like to tell you the story out of the mouths of the people that did it. Now, we've had plenty of policemen come in who actually were involved in cases. I've told you about cases I've been involved in. We had Craig
Glazier
in, who was the king of sting, and he talked about some of the criminal activity that he was involved in,
ripping off drug dealers for their drugs and money.
Right, he was the Robin Hood of the drug business at one point in time. But his last sting, he got stung by the feds. He thought he was dealing with Colombian dope dealers, and he was actually dealing with the IRS and the FBI and a variety of other federal agencies. I asked him, I said, Craig, didn't you think it was funny they were no Hispanic people that you were dealing with? He said, I did think so, but I got greedy. That might have been what happened to our friend Mac here. Mac, say hello to the folks.
Hello, folks.
So did you get greedy?
I got greedy and stupid.
Yeah, well, I guess I made a few mistakes myself as a kid.
I think we all have.
All have to a greater or lesser extent. Yours was greater and ours were lesser. You know, everything's perfect just as it is. And we're sitting here telling this story and getting your story out, your side of the story out. And I think folks will find that interesting. And who knows, Brad Pitt may hear this and say, you know, I want to play that part. And we're going to make a movie out of that. The next thing you know, you're in Hollywood being a technical advisor on the movie.
Bruce Willis or Sean Penn would probably jump on this.
They would.
It really is. I mean, it's an amazing story, just all the various aspects of it. If people would go out, they can Google Martin J. McNally online. There's a Wikipedia page about this. There's a little bit of the at Justia.com. Some of the case file.
It was Max appellate case.
Yeah, Max appellate case where he was fighting some of the charges and things that they had going there. But I mean, it's a story that's really compelling, I think, in terms of just all the things that happened. And you know, you have to take this back to when it occurred, which is 1972.
Right.
You know, when it comes to hijacking planes, I think things really did change after September 11th, 2001. They may have changed before that. Security certainly had been beefed up at that point, but I think people's, you know, their apprehension, if you will, in that kind of a situation definitely escalated, because it went from people just wanting to maybe get relatives out of jail or get cash to making political statements and killing people. I think when you were telling this in the last episode, you were talking about taking control of the plane after you were just about to land in Tulsa, getting into the bathroom, being there for a few minutes, standing in the back of the plane, waving the stewardess to get her attention. And you would think there'd be some pandemonium because there you've got what may look like a machine gun wasn't actually a machine gun, but I mean, a gun on a plane.
You have to admire that stewardess for being cool and calm, I would say.
Yes, Jane Elizabeth Furlong, she was a very nice stewardess. She was calm, and she took care of business very professionally. All the stewardesses took care of business professionally.
Oh, good.
Okay. They kept the rest of the people relatively calm. She took the note up to the pilot. He obviously turned the plane around. You were kind of clearing people out of the back of the plane. There was a little bit of a confrontation there with the passenger.
There was.
Luckily, he didn't try to be a hero.
He didn't try to be a hero. He would have been a dead hero.
But you had pointed your gun at him, and he kind of got the news.
I gave him my growl, and he turned around and did the right thing. He didn't try to kick me or rush me, because he would have been dead.
Yeah. But here you are, you're 27,000 feet in the air. It's not a long trip between St. Louis and Tulsa. It's probably not even an hour. It was Flight 119, American Airlines, left at 2:35 in the afternoon. So it was still daylight. You turn around. You're headed back to St. Louis. So we kind of left off at that point.
Yes, we're heading back to St. Louis. When we landed, I told the stewardesses, I says, we've got too many people on board here. We need to get rid of all the women and children. The stewardesses notified all the women and the children. We got rid of the women and children.
Any of the husbands and fathers that stayed on, was there any hassle? Did the women like?
One of the women didn't want to leave because she was hugging onto her husband's neck, and I could see that up front. That point there, I think I told the stewardesses, I says, we still have too many people aboard this plane. Let's get rid of a lot of the men. I sent word up to the pilot to tell these people who could get off the plane. And he came on the intercom, and he announced that anybody on the plane who is sick and medications and has a heart problem can leave the plane.
So everybody gets up and starts walking off.
Yeah.
Gary, that's exactly what happened.
Everybody stands up.
Everybody. 100% of these people stood up. And I was in the back. I jumped into the aisle, and I shouted out. I says, sit down now. And everybody sat down. I told the stewardesses, go up there and tell the pilot, if he makes another comment like that, I'm going to come up to the cockpit and throttle his ass. So after everybody sat down, I told the stewardesses, I said, we need to get rid of all the men. We keep about 20 of them on board this plane. I want 20 of the men that are healthy. All the children can get off. So that's what they did. They reloaded the plane with gas, refueled, and we took off. And the pilot asked me, what now?
So you had directed them to take back off, get up, walk.
Yes,
the
I directed them to refuel and take off into the air until we get the money all situated on the ground.
So you didn't want to sit on the ground?
No, I wouldn't sit on the ground. I wanted to be in the air so that this plane couldn't be charged while we're on the ground by the FBI and other people. But
when you landed at the airport, they didn't pull up to the terminal, did they?
No.
They pulled away from the terminal somewhere off on a tarmac?
Yeah, they didn't pull up to the terminal. I think they were on the runway. I forget actually. But they to get off the plane, I think they sent out the airbags, and the people got off, sliding out
like it's an emergency exit.
Like it was an emergency, and they were all getting on this airbag and flying down. They got that all taken care of. They got it refueled. We got up into the air. The pilot said, "What to do now?" And I said, "Well, we're going to fly around until they have the money, the parachutes, and the shovel, and whatever else I want. And then we'll land and pick it up and refuel and back up in the air." He said, "Can I get out of the airspace here in St. Louis?" I said, you can go wherever you want. He got out of the airspace in St. Louis and was flying around in a circle somewhere. I don't know where.
Because at that point, they probably had to stop all air traffic coming in and out of St. Louis because of this.
They pretty much did stop everything till we got out of the area, and then they could continue with the landings and the takeoffs. We're up in the air, and the stewardess comes back and says they don't have $500,000 in St. Louis. We can pick it up at the headquarters of American Airlines in Fort Worth. Would that be okay? And I said, young lady, you can go any place in the world to get this money, but we're going to get the $500,000. She told the pilot, and they made a beeline for Fort Worth, Texas, and they picked up their speed, and I mean, we were flying. So after about 10 minutes, they came back. The girl said, now they have $100,000 in St. Louis. Would that be okay? I said, young lady, that's not going to do it. If I thought I was going to get $100,000, I wouldn't have climbed out of bed in the morning. We're gonna go to Fort Worth. We're gonna get this money and so forth. So then, after a couple of minutes, they came back and said they got the money in St. Louis. And I said, okay, turn around. Let's go back to St. Louis. We turned around. We went back to St. Louis. When we got back to St. Louis now, we landed. They started procedures to bring the money and the parachutes and all that stuff to the plane. And when they did that, the stewardess said, how are we going to bring it aboard? And I said, take any man up here, go outside and pick up the chutes, the money, and bring it aboard. The stewardess did that, and apparently she got some guy with bright red pants. And he got an attitude thinking that I was the one that pointed him out because of his audacious pants. But I didn't. That was the stewardess.
Oh, so yeah. He claimed that you, in the article, singled him out because then you could remember who he was because of his clothes.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
I didn't do that, though. They brought the parachutes on, the money. And when they brought the money in, the money bag, leather mail bag, I opened it up. I pulled out these two sacks. One sack had $400,000 in it, and the other sack had $100,000 in it. And they were sealed with a lead seal. Now, I never opened up those seals to look in the money.
To see if it was actual money? Or
I never did that.
And you never counted it?
I never counted it. I never looked at the money. It was sealed, and I zipped up the mailbag and set it aside, and I said, "This is what I came for."
Now, and I think I want to say in the some of the stuff you would read online, you didn't ask for an exact $500,000.
Yes, I asked for $502,200. I believe that's was the figure that I asked for, and I asked for the $2,200 in tens and twenties.
Was there a reason for that?
That would have been my pocket change. When I hit the ground, I was going to bury the money, the mailbag.
And that's why you wanted the shovel, too.
That's right. That's why I asked for the collapsible military shovel. I would have buried the money, taken my pocket change, come back home.
What about, was there one glove? Did you really ask for just one glove? That's what they claimed.
I asked for a pair of gloves. The reason I did that was because my plastic gloves that I had on had broken. No, I didn't want the fingerprints showing up. I don't know what they gave me on the gloves.
Okay.
But they gave you the gloves. You asked for, was it five parachutes?
I asked for five parachutes, I think five harnesses, or
yeah,
two or three harnesses.
Yeah, there's different. It's like four harnesses, a different number of harnesses, according to the article.
Yeah.
How come you wanted that many parachutes and harnesses?
I wanted the parachutes to break them open to make sure the shroud lines weren't cut on any of the chutes. I wanted to make and if I noticed any of the chutes with cut shroud lines, I would know that they were giving me some bogus chutes, and that would have created a problem. So I broke open a couple of these chutes.
Oh, I see. So you figure if you broke open a couple of them and
yes,
they weren't cut, then the other would be safe to use.
Yes.
All right, I got you now.
It would be safe to believe that the others are okay.
Okay.
At one point in time, on these harnesses that you put on your body, parachute harness, I couldn't figure out how to put this on. So I told them, I said, bring me an FBI agent toward the planes, or not an FBI agent. I said, bring me a parachute expert who can show me how to do these harnesses to put the chutes up. I also asked, I said, where's the main chutes for this this rig? He said, you didn't ask for main chutes. And I said, you're giving me reserve chutes here. You're trying to kill me. I looked at my watch. I said, damn, I don't have enough time to go to demand these backpacks.
Now, the backpack chute is the main chute, and the front, the one chute that goes on your front is your reserve.
Yes, the reserve emergency chute on your chest.
And all they gave you were reserve chutes.
That's it.
So if the reserve chute failed for any reason, you were dead.
You're it. Yes. All I had was one chute. Pissed me off. The time constraints were such that I had to go with it. I didn't have any choice. So as we're doing this, the money on the board and the chutes and everything, and they brought this parachute expert. Yeah, right. He was an FBI agent. He was playing it. As he was doing these things, I snapped. I says, you need to get off this plane, dude. You coming on board here? I know what you're trying to do. So I kicked him off the plane. I told the pilot, we're ready to go.
Now, so this was actually at the point that you had come back to and landed at the St. Louis field a second time.
We landed at about 9:30 p.m. We made all these changes, the money, the parachutes, and everything. Before we took off, I had the stewardesses come back and help me put on the harness. One of the stewardesses got down on her knees, and she was helping me buckle up the leg straps. Her name was Diane Demoise. She's a French girl, I think. Very nice, very pretty girl. She looked at the other stewardess and she said, I don't think we're supposed to be doing this.
That part of the job description.
And I looked down at her and I said, young lady, you're supposed to do whatever I tell you to do. Trust me. Let's buckle this stuff up. So we buckled up the leg straps and she stood up and I buckled the chest strap. Now, at this point here, I got on all my clothes and stuff, but I'm getting this stuff dressed up for later, because I'm gonna undo all this stuff and then take off the pants and the stuff on the top.
Still wearing the wig.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still wearing the wig.
Now, when they put the harness on you, I mean, you still had to hold on to the weapon, at least, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
You're not like, well, let me put this down here while you guys get this harness around my arm.
No, absolutely not. Rarely did I lay down that grease gun looking rifle. Rarely. And if I ever did, I would have the hand grenade and the pistol in my hand, so that I would always have a weapon in my hand, so I couldn't be rushed.
So that FBI agent that came on board, would you just step back a few feet and tell him, okay, show me how you put that on, and so he have him put it on himself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That he was 10 feet in front of me. I didn't let him get close to me.
That was smart.
You presume that he wasn't actually a parachute instructor.
Well, I thought he would be a parachute expert, but as he's fumbling around, I said, no, this isn't right. You need to get off this thing. You're an FBI agent.
You'd think the FBI could have found somebody that had been in the 101st Airborne, and you know they had somebody around there that had been in the Airborne in their military career, but they probably didn't.
They just sent a bunch of fakers in.
Well, they had a field office there in St. Louis, I'm assuming.
They did. Yeah. Yes, they had a field office.
You're like all set. You got everything all set.
I'm all set. I'm all ready to go.
And then something happened.
Well, not at that point, but I'm all set to go. I told the stewardesses, I said, we need to get rid of all these men on the plane, but I'm going to keep one hostage, a civilian hostage. So I said, tell these people that we need one. So the guy that chose to stay on the plane, we would have had the pilot and the co-pilot, flight engineer, a stewardess, and him.
So one man volunteered to stay on?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, he volunteered to stay on, and I found out later that he was an accountant. He was a young accountant for the American Airlines.
Oh, really? Oh, I see.
He was a young accountant. He stayed on. We got rid of everybody else.
The pilot, the co-pilot, the engineer, you had a stewardess.
Oh, something else happened. At one point, the pilot asked me if they could change crew. And I said, yes, you can change crew. Came back later and said, we decided that we'll stay with this. I said, no, you already raised the issue. I want to get a different crew in here. So let's get a different crew in here, pilot, co-pilot, and flight engineer and so forth. So what happened is they did change crews. These new crew that came on, I had them all turn around and make sure they didn't have any weapons on them, and then they went up to the cockpit. One of the guys that came on, he was an FBI agent posing as a flight engineer.
Mm-hmm.
While we were on the ground, I told the stewardesses, tell that pilot that I know that you people have brought a weapon on board. I can just feel it. But you tell them that if I see a weapon or if a weapon is pulled, this machine gun that I got, I'll pull the trigger and people are going to get killed. I'll pull this bomb too. I know you got a weapon on board. What happened is that this flight engineer was really an FBI agent. His only position on this thing was to kill me. And he had the gun to do it. We're ready to go. Refueled. I gave the pilot the instructions on where we were going to go. Earlier in the flight, I told him to get flight plans for Seattle, San Francisco, Ontario, and Atlanta, Georgia. I'm going to have one of those flights that we're going to take, but I'll tell you later which one. So as we're getting ready to take off, we're going to go to Ontario. He's going to fly in along the runway at 200 or 300 feet, so I can verify that we're at Ontario. And then he's going to...
Now you mean Ontario, Canada, not Ontario, Canada. California.
Yeah, Ontario, Canada. He's going to fly in 200 or 300 feet from the runway, and we're going to go back up to 5,000 feet, and then we're going to head on to JFK in New York. Now, these are the instructions that I gave him. I wasn't going to be doing that. I was going to bail out.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is this. We're ready to take off. We're on the runway. We're on the runway. I'm going to be bailing out about 12:45 in the morning at this point.
Yeah, it'd be
however,
pitch black out.
However, that's not what happened. It's about 12 midnight. We're on the plane. We're on the runway, ready to take off. The pilot throttles the engines, and we start rolling down the runway. And after we get a couple hundred feet, he pulls back and he says, we got a vehicle on the runway. We got a vehicle coming. Oh, my God, he's going to hit us. Boom. He hit us.
Now, were you up in the cockpit at that point?
Beg your pardon?
Were you in the cockpit with
no,
them?
No, I never went into the cockpit until much later.
You just had the hostage and the stewardesses back in the back part of the cabin.
Taking off right there, everybody was up in the cockpit, and I'm in the back.
Oh, you're back by yourself.
Yeah.
So then how did you, he was announcing this over like the PA.
He says, oh my God, somebody's going to hit us coming down the runway. Boom. And now when it hit, the plane moved back, and I moved forward. Twice. Boom, boom. He hit the nose gear going about 90 miles an hour. Boom. And then he spun around and hit the main strut on the...
As a result of impacting the main gear in the front of the plane.
He hit the nose gear and then he spun around and hit the main strut and stopped right there. And at that point there, I said, get this plane in the air, screaming. Get this fucking plane in the air. And the pilot came in on the intercom and he says, we can't do anything. We've been hit. Stewardess came back and I said, well, tell the pilot we're going to have to get another plane. In the meantime, stay here. And if this plane catches fire, there's an emergency door here. You and I are going to jump out this door, however far it was, and you're going to be with me, with the money, and me, and you, and me with this gun. But we're going to get another plane. So she went up there and told the pilot we're going to have to get another plane. Came back. The fire crew came out and put foam on all over the car and everything.
But you're in the plane and you can see these guys. You're stopped again on the runway.
I'm not. No, all the windows are closed. I can't see anything outside.
You don't know what's going on outside.
Yeah, that's right.
Only from what the pilot tells you.
That's right. I don't see all that. I'm not opening the window.
Because you're afraid that there might be like a sniper.
Yeah, I know they're going to have snipers. God, what happened next? Oh, I told the pilot, get another plane. Tell the control tower to take any 727 on this runway, on the tarmac, load it up, refuel it, and we're going to take it.
Martin J. McNally, he's hijacked this plane. It was Flight 119, which originated in New York, landed in St. Louis, had gone to Tulsa, hadn't landed in Tulsa, went back to St. Louis, was refueled, got money, and he took off. Or no, they didn't get the money yet because they were still collecting it up, and they said, oh, it's going to be in Fort Worth. So
then he went back in the air.
He goes back in the air, going to fly there. They go, oh, it turns out we do have the money in St. Louis. Turns around, comes back to St. Louis. They're on the ground again. He clears most everybody who was left on the plane
off, except stewardess and one person and
the pilot, co-pilot, the engineer.
And then they change the flight crew, bring an FBI agent on and a new flight.
Which is funny because the crew, I don't know what they were like, wanting to change crews. Like, I guess there's like a legal limit how long they can fly.
I think all bets are off on this.
I would think so because, you know, they're hijackers.
Change crews
in charge at this point. FAA doesn't matter if they say you can't fly more than 12 hours.
They wanted to get that FBI agent on the plane. That's why they changed crews.
You think that's the crew suggested it? And then they. So then they bring in, now they got a pilot, a co-pilot, and a guy who doesn't know anything about planes because they already sent a guy who doesn't know anything about parachutes, and it was pretty obvious right away because Martin's like, you don't know anything, you need to get out of here. And it's nighttime, and he's getting ready to take off. This guy sees this on the news, essentially.
He's sitting at the airport, what I remember reading. He sees it on the news. He becomes enraged. He gets in his late model Cadillac and crashes through the fence. He has to take two runs at the fence to get through the fence. There's actually cops standing there, you know, standing all around guarding the perimeter, and he runs right by the cop and runs right into the nose gear and spins off that, and Max says, and he hit one of the struts, and Max screaming, you know, get this thing off the ground, and they can't get off the ground, so we're going to pick it up from there next time, folks. What's that guy's name?
I'm looking it up. I don't see it here. We'll have to add it in the notes.
Yeah, well, we can add it in later. He is he ends up running for president a few years later. I think he maybe been a little bit mentally unbalanced. And as we said, he ran on the platform of, yeah, I stopped the hijacking.
Well, only temporarily.
Only temporarily.
Only temporarily.
Let Donald Trump spin that story. Maybe that'd be the ideal thing. So let's get out of here. And,
well, before we do, we should probably make our public service announcement.
Yeah, I guess we ought to. We didn't do it last episode. It's if you have a problem, or you have a friend, relative, employee has a problem with drugs or alcohol or any kind of addiction, make your first call to First Call, 816-361-5900. Or if you're out of town, and I realize a lot of you listeners are not in Kansas City, why, go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org, and they have all kinds of resources and that 24-hour hotline, and they can direct you to a resource in your town. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Good night, Aaron.
Good night.
Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Twitter at Odd-O-Matic Music.